It's time for three stories you should know.
What message do you have for Courtney Smith?
Well, I have a message for everyone involved in this. I'm sorry that we're in this situation.
That's Ohio State football coach Urban Meyer speaking at a press conference on Wednesday. Meyer received a three-game suspension, and that's where we're going to start this week. I'm joined by The Wall Street Journal's Rachel Bachman. Welcome back, Rachel Bachman.
Great to be here, Howard.
And by Jeanette Howard, columnist from The Athletic. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, Howard.
Rachel Bachman, you are the lucky one. Please tell us about what is the latest college football embarrassment.
Yes, well, of course, as you say, Urban Meyer was suspended for three games for failing to report allegations of domestic violence against an assistant coach to university officials. But the real news started after the press conference that announced his suspension. A report of investigative findings the university released late Wednesday night really cast Meyer in a dimmer light. It detailed his changing stories about what he knew and when, multiple excuses for why he kept this coach on despite the coach missing practices, taking high school coaches to strip clubs. And the report even detailed Meyer discussing with a coworker how to delete text messages from his phone so they wouldn't be made public. Now, Meyer is 73-8 as Ohio State coach. He has a national championship. I want to know, are we done pretending that we want our coaches to be leaders of men and role models? Shouldn't we just admit that as long as they're winning, they can do what they want?
That sort of seems to be what's happening, right, Jeanette?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've always known it, and this is just another iteration. The thing that's different at Ohio State is they got rid of Woody Hayes for slugging a player. They got rid of Jim Tressel for players getting tattoos and other swag. This is a little bit of a departure for them, and I almost wonder if there isn't a Tressel effect where they thought, like, we did that and we really didn't have to, and they overcorrected this time, because I think it's hard to maintain that Urban Meyer should still have a job.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that Urban Meyer shouldn't have a job if any of this matters. And I think, Rachel, to the point you were making about the rest of the report, not only was it the report, but it was also the press conference where they didn't even mention Courtney Smith by name and instead decided to talk about Buckeye Nation. What does this say in a post-Ray Rice world that this was the response from Ohio State?
Well, it's obviously very troubling. I think that one of the things that fans certainly are talking about now is they're contesting the allegations themselves. To me, that slightly misses the point because, as this report detailed, there are other troubling things about this behavior, about Meyer's reaction to it. And certainly, when there are repeated allegations of domestic violence, you have to take serious action just as a precautionary measure.
We talk about these things in terms of, well, how come women don't come forward? I think the last 3 days is more proof as to why women don't come forward.
Yeah, but I think Courtney Smith has been a different kind of person. I mean, there are people that are timid when they come forward or almost apologetic. I think she has been willing to take on Buckeye Nation, if you want. I even hate the term,
yes.
But I think she's been willing to do this knowing what the blowback would be. And I think, if anything, if you focus on her and not Ohio State, this is an affirming story about somebody who had the courage to not be kind of cowed by the forces that she knew she'd encounter.
Yeah, that's a tremendous point. And also, however, when I do think about it, you still think that at the end of the day, that courage should be rewarded by courage from the university. And so far, it hasn't been.
Yeah, I agree.
And the other part of this, too, Rachel, is that look at the players. You got Terrell Pryor in that Tressel scandal. He was suspended 5 games. You had Todd Gurley was suspended 4 games when he was at Georgia for accepting $3,000 of what, autograph memorabilia? It's not as if the university system or the NCAA doesn't like to punish people. They just don't like to punish certain people.
Right. The jury's sort of still out on whether the NCAA will even take any steps at all.
Jeanette Howard, your turn.
I'd like to talk about the NFL, because as if the NFL doesn't have enough culture war issues going on, the league is committed this year to a supercharged version of analytics it's calling Next Gen Stats. Basically, it's data points collected from tracking devices in every player's shoulder pads. But for the first time this year, clubs will have access to data about players from all 32 teams, not just their own. Now, it's up to each team to make sense of the information, but the expectation is very soon teams will build predictive models that go beyond opposing teams' tendencies, and they'll be able to more scientifically compare individual players across the league. Now, if you're a player especially, do you like this tracking idea, or do you feel you're contributing to your own demise and giving the club another hammer in contract talks? If you're a fan or a coach, will next-gen stats distort football the way analytics such as defensive shifts are being blamed for killing baseball? Or am I just being a crank?
Rachel Bachman, is Jeanette just being a crank?
Well, I welcome cranks. I think cranks are really interesting and kind of ironically fun.
Cranks are us.
Exactly. But, you know, I'm actually skeptical to what extent coaches are going to adopt this information. I'll give you an example. In the NBA, it really took about 5 years, at least 5 years, between the time when data showed that it was a big advantage to take a lot of three-point shots and the time when teams actually started doing that. And so given that football tends to be sort of more change-averse, more hidebound, I'm not certain that coaches will buy into the data. I think they might be a little skeptical and wait and see and maybe wait for some innovators to experiment.
Well, I actually think this is going to be great. I want it to happen. And the reason why I want it to happen is because when Jeanette talks about baseball, the diminishment, the complete diminishment of the manager has been one of the byproducts of all this analytics revolution. And so now you've got the front office and the analytics departments essentially making out the lineup in baseball. I just would love to see the front office tell Bill Belichick who he's going to be playing. But Jeanette, the one part of this that is really sort of chilling is that this is a labor trap for players, isn't it?
It is a player trap, if you ask me, because it's one of the chilling things is that they're going to collect these data points on players that are even away from the play. So you're being evaluated on plays you're not even in. You know, I mean, there's all kind of applications that are tantamount to almost like, it sounds silly, but like spying on you.
Sure. Well, and we do know the end game to all of this is lowering player salaries and making players less valuable than they actually are. Okay, I'm up. Interleague play, threat or menace? The thrill is gone. The novelty of Yankees-Dodgers outside of the World Series has worn off, and there never was any novelty to Angels-Reds. Besides, how can you play a sport every day under two different sets of rules? I mean, who does that? 2 years ago, the Tigers were in a pennant race, but had to play their final three games in Atlanta, where they lost the DH and one of their best hitters, Victor Martinez. Unfair disadvantage to the Tigers. This year, during the final week, the Cubs play at the White Sox and get to add a DH. Unfair advantage, Cubs. So, Jeanette, interleague's got to go, am I right?
I don't mind interleague as much as the DH.
Really?
I mean, I think if you had DH in both leagues, the interleague thing solves itself. And
you want to watch Chris Archer? You want to watch Chris Archer hit? He just got injured swinging a bat the other day.
I want to see Bartolo Colon hit 100 times a season. That's what I want.
I actually think that regardless of whether it stays or goes, it's kind of irrelevant. And here's an analogy for you. Coloring books for adults. So several stay with me here. Several years ago, these were on a rocket ship ride. Suddenly, overnight, they were the hottest things in bookstores. They actually helped keep some bookstores in business because they were selling so much and there was such a high profit margin. Now, of course, the market has crashed. They're really largely a fad. And I think, you know, there was a sort of a similar effect to interleague play. Now the thrill is gone.
Yeah, and it's been 21 years. And I just don't think it makes a lot of sense to play a sport every single day under two sets of rules. I think it's just a complete disadvantage to somebody.
But then what if you use that logic, how is the World Series okay?
Because it's the World Series. My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been The Wall Street Journal's Rachel Bachman. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you very much.
And, of course, Jeanette Howard, columnist for The Athletic. Thank you, Jeanette.
Thank you, Howard.
During World War II, more than 10,000 Japanese Americans were interned at Manzanar, 3 hours north of Los Angeles. The camp was home to a small judo dojo.
Shindokan. They called it that themselves, and it was a joke because the building was so rickety, it quaked and shaked.
Just ahead, what happened when a Los Angeles police officer brought a group of young athletes to compete at Manzanar? And remember to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Only a Game NPR.